Welcome on into the 7 o'clock hour, hour number two of the program here. Chris Thomas Turtle with you until 10 o'clock. And I want to remind you that this Saturday from noon until 2 p.m., join Ali Mack at Lou Saab Kia in Newnan as we get ready for Sunday's big game. One lucky fan will win the ultimate tailgate kit, a 50-inch 4K smart TV with rolling stand and other prizes. Plus, another winner takes home tickets to an upcoming home game. Again, that's Saturday from noon until 2 at Lou Saab Kia in Newnan with Ali Mack and Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Pretty sweet. Go check it out with our very own Ali Mack. I got something I'm doing, too. I will tell you about a little later in the show. Oren, I gave you a task today.
Yes.
Usually we'll do a true and false segment.
Yes.
But I wanted to spice things up a little bit today.
Spicy.
Because there's a lot to take away from that game on Sunday.
Absolutely there is.
And I wanted to know, in your opinion, what are the five biggest takeaways / question marks that you have after the game on Sunday? So I asked you to come up with a list of five, and then I will react, and I'll give you a grade at the end of how I think your list measures up, in my humble opinion.
All right, I
so
like
you'll
that.
Be put under the spotlight. I didn't tell you about that.
No, you didn't put the grade part. You said the questions, didn't say the grade.
I didn't tell you about that part. So
alrighty.
Let's see. Under the spotlight here. Let's go in reverse order here. Let's start with your number five.
My number five. Well, it's sort of a weird one, but
I like weird.
I shouldn't say weird in the sense that this was a huge issue on Sunday, but they're already taking steps to try to correct it. And I feel like we're going to have a resolution come Sunday that wasn't the same resolution that we had the previous week. And that's Younghoe Koo. That's
wow,
my number
that's
five.
Your number five.
That's my number five one
wow.
Because I feel like
they're going to figure it out.
They've been already on the ball in attempting to address it. Now, you know, there's some questions about why wasn't this addressed before we got to Sunday.
Well, here's what my issue with it. Oh, and I'm glad you brought this up. What was the Lenny Krieg thing for then?
I'll show it, looks like.
Yeah, because apparently he's not ready, because that would be in a very easy transition.
He's got the kicker right on the roster to replace Youngway.
Especially considering he hit a 75-yard field goal in preseason. I'm exaggerating, but it looked like it would have been
man.
Good from, you know, 60-plus. So I don't get it, but I don't get some things that the Falcons do from time to time. So, hey, what do I know?
It's just it brings into question some, as Mike Bell says, some tactics from management, from Terry, and from that front office. If we're at the point now after week one where Youngway's spot is in question, why wasn't this something that was addressed more seriously? But you've gone now and gotten a guy in John Parker Romo to attempt to kind of, hey, this is a competition this week, Youngway.
Has anyone made the just don't ask him to hold the snap joke yet?
The first, when I saw the word, when I saw the name Romo, not going to lie, got a little bit nervous. Romo, not a name you want associated with kicking the football, huh?
You can kick it, just don't ask
just don't
him
hold
to hold
it. Don't
snap.
Hold it, man. Don't hold it.
But,
in a pivotal playoff game.
All right, I like it. Number five, that's bold. What's your number four?
My number four, not so much a concern, but that number two corner for the Falcons wasn't exactly.
Yeah. Now there is
wasn't a highlight on Sunday afternoon.
There's some debate going around on that second touchdown to Egbuka that wasn't actually Hughes's like position, that he was trying to make up for somebody else
so
who was out of place.
Arch made a point that it was Jesse Bates who bit on a route, and they knew he liked to bite on that route. And when he bit on that route, it put Hughes in sort of an unfortunate spot. But
still doesn't account for the first one.
Still doesn't account for the first one. I like what the Falcons have in A.J. Terrell.
He played great.
Billy Bowman had the one sack for the Falcons came from him. You're solid, it looks like, in that back half now with Jesse Bates and Xavier Watts. Xavier Watts almost came down with two picks. Would have liked to have seen him get maybe one of those, but I remember last season, the tilt-a-whirl that D. Alford had in attempting to guard those Vikings wide receivers, and that wasn't a fun watch at all that Sunday, seeing those Vikings players run wild down the field.
Well, it was embarrassing what it was. It was downright embarrassing. Can I be honest with you?
Go ahead with you.
I was a little surprised that was their ultimate decision at CB2.
Okay.
I'm surprised they didn't try to upgrade through the draft or through free agency.
Okay.
I thought Mike Hughes played against the run really well last year. He's a very physical corner, and he can make some plays for you. And he's also a short tackler. And I thought he shined in those two areas when he was called upon to address those needs for the team. In terms of being a pure defender, in terms of guarding a receiver one-on-one, not overly impressed. I think he's solid, but I think there could have been an upgrade there. So I like that number 4.
All right.
I had my doubts going into the year.
My number 3. You could be down 2 starting receivers on Sunday in Drake London and in Darnell Mooney. It's not ideal. Shout out to Kyle Pitts. Pitts caught almost every target that was thrown his way. He made a point that it wasn't just about the catches. He got yards after the catch.
Yiggity yak.
Which was great, that yak. The big play of the day was a little dump off to Bijan, who turned, I think that might have been his first 50-yard plus play of his career in the NFL, and got a touchdown off of that. But
that's hard to believe, by the way.
Yeah, just.
But the one thing people did say is that they would like to see him hit the home run ball a little bit more.
And he hit the home run ball on Sunday to start that game off. That being said, if you're without Darnell and you're without Drake on Sunday,
Casey Washington had a couple of drops.
Casey did.
He also made a couple of nice catches.
He also did.
Kadarius Hodge, that was bad.
It was bad,
yes. That was bad. He played hero, ironically, against the Bucs last year. And when he had a chance to do it again.
Did not happen.
Because the route he scored on last year was not a deep
ball. It was like a catch and run, yeah.
Yeah, it was a catch and run, which he's obviously much better at than just being a straight line wide receiver. So, that's a real issue, man. Because if it's Ray-Ray McCloud and Casey Washington as your starting wide receivers against a really good Vikings secondary, gulp.
And the Vikings defense yesterday showed you in that second half their ability to adjust and to game plan. And
Caleb came out like a house on fire.
It was 13 of his first 14 in that ball game.
And then
it turned away completely.
Yeah.
And that defense for Minnesota started to get after it more and more. So Brian Flores is going to have something cooked up on Sunday for Michael Penix. And hopefully Michael Penix has some healthy guys to a little football too. Which leads me into my number 2. 69 yards rushing on Sunday.
Ugh.
There were moments where it just – Vita Vea is a house wrecker. I know that. And there were times when Lindstrom was one-on-one against him.
And that's just an awful – that's not his forte.
And those moments where he was one-on-one against him. There's not very many people in the NFL that can block Vita Vea one-on-one. And those moments, Vita Vea just destroyed things. This defensive line for the Vikings doesn't get any easier. You got 2 fire breathers at pass rushing.
Hargrave had 2 sacks last week.
Yeah, Hargrave and it's a very good defense for a reason. And I'm worried about the offensive line's ability to, A, be able to run the football. And if they can't run the football – if those guys on the Vikings can pin their ears back and just start coming and coming and coming at Michael Penix, it's not great.
Here's my concern. This wasn't a surprise, Oren Romain. Vita Vea didn't come out of nowhere.
No, he did not.
He could block the surface of the sun.
He can.
Literally and
that's
figuratively.
That's a large human being.
So, Zach Robinson, hello. Like, where was the game plan, sir? That's why I asked Joe Patrick about it. Oh, that was scary to me. I agree.
And my number 1, I mentioned that they got 1 sack on Sunday, courtesy of Billy Bowman. They were able to do some things to Baker to get him off his spot, and the Bucs passing game wasn't as successful as it had been last year or in previous games against the Falcons, and I get that part too. But you still want to see more. You want to see him not just be taken off his spot. You want to see him taken down. You want to see sacks. And I get the argument that pressures and sacks, they both have a place almost equal to each other in some sense.
No. Orin, let me stop you. Don't justify this nonsense. I don't want to hear it. I'm so anti. You know what, Orin? I'm so glad you made this your number one. I am so anti this pressure is almost as good of a sack pap that we've been hearing. You know how good it was last week? Baker Mayfield threw 3 touchdowns and was their leading rusher last week and got key first down after first down after first down with his legs, with his arm, looking off defenders, slipping out Caden Ellis and Divine Diablo from a sack, slipping out of defenders' arms left and right, moving out of the backfield, out of the pocket, wide left, wide right, magician-like. I don't want to hear about James Pierce Jr. and his pressures, because you know why? It resulted in nothing.
Nothing. If the goal of this defense was to improve the pass rush, the folks at PFF, they do all those metrics where you have win rate, pass rush, win rate, and all that good stuff. And that's a great metric to have, and I'm sure at the end of the season it'll mean more than it does in week one. But week one, I don't care what your pass rush win rate grade was.
The only
was.
Win rate that matters is did you win
bring him
the
down?
Damn game.
Did you bring Breaker down? Did you get a sack? Did you win the ball game?
And
Those weren't successful metrics for Sunday on the Falcons.
No, I'm so glad you made that your number one. I am so if I hear one more or see one more tweet about win rate and pass rush and pressures versus sacks being equal, I'm going to blow a gasket. Because, no, sorry, you just had, as Orin just said, a literal example of you had all that crap and you lost the game. Why? Because Baker Mayfield schooled you again. 404-726-0929. We haven't gotten into any of the other games from the weekend, so let's do that next. We'll welcome in Infinity Sports Network's Maggie Gray, NFL insider. Big Bills fan, by the way. Definitely want to talk to her about that. That game was bonkers. You talk about comebacks? Wow. 41-40. We'll get in a deep dive into the NFL Week 1 action with our good friend Maggie Gray, the Infinity Sports Network. That's coming up next. Don't go anywhere. What a weekend of football it was, both in college and the pros. We haven't even gotten around to the college football yet. We will do that coming up in the 9 o'clock hour. There were so many great games in week one. None more satisfying, I think, than the Sunday night affair, which was Bills and Ravens. And we're going to catch up with our friend Maggie Gray here in just a second of the Infinity Sports Network. She's a huge Bills fan. Wanted to have her on to talk about that. Excuse me. As well as the NFL slate. She's a longtime NFL insider as well. Because if you're a Bills fan, did you go to sleep? I'm going to ask Maggie honestly. Did she stay up to the end of that game? Because it looked over. It looked like the proverbial fat lady had sung. And that one was all she wrote, until it wasn't. League MVP put the team on his back, and he showed why he is the reigning MVP. To talk about all that and more, let's head out to the WadeFord.com hotline. Welcome in, Maggie Gray, co-host on the Infinity Sports Network, Maggie and Perloff. Maggie, I thought about doing the right thing and starting with maybe your thoughts on Michael Penix or another tough loss for the Falcons, but I got to know. What was it like sitting there on Sunday night watching that comeback for your Bills against the Ravens? Because that feeling is, to be honest, one we don't get here in Atlanta very often.
Oh, Chris, thanks so much for having me on. Thanks for thinking of me when the Bills actually do something right, because there's a lot of the Bills history, and I'm a diehard Bills fan from upstate New York, the boondocks of upstate New York. There's a lot of times that usually doesn't go the Bills' favor, in their favor. The Bills have a long history with Derrick Henry, even going back to the Titans, that is pretty ugly. Henry has really gotten the best of the Bills in a lot of different ways and areas, and at times has really steamrolled them. So the fact that he was killing Buffalo, I mean, they could not stop him until the fumble. The irony that he was both the GOAT and the GOAT of the game, right? He was like the greatest and also the one who created the moment that really led Buffalo and made the comeback a reality. It was just stunning. Again, like the Bills and the Ravens kind of have a lot in common that way. They've both kind of been snake bitten. Now the Ravens have actually won Super Bowls, but you know, they've been snake bitten lately and not been able to get over the hump. And the fact that the Bills were on the right side of this, quite frankly, I'm still stunned.
Yeah, it was one of the more epic games you'll watch. Another epic game from the weekend, the Aaron Rodgers revenge game, which couldn't have gone better for him. But let me ask you this. Who were you more surprised by, Rodgers or Fields? Because they both played really well.
Yeah, I was actually more surprised with how Justin Fields looks, to be honest. I thought that he looked a lot more in control, a lot more steady. You know, the passing game was actually there. I was most surprised, if you're talking about any individual unit, I don't know what it foreshadows for the season, but I was surprised the Steelers' defense wasn't better. You know, that's kind of been their calling card through all the ups and downs of all the different quarterbacks they've tried since Ben Roethlisberger retired and the lack of creativity on offense with the Steelers. Their defense has been what's really carried them. And the fact that they let up over 30 points to the New York Jets, even if I wasn't impressed by Justin Fields, that's still a lot. So I was probably more impressed by Fields. The thing about Rodgers, first of all, just from like Aaron Rodgers, you know, kind of personality, which, you know, some people love, some people don't. I'm surprised he even really acknowledged this as being a revenge game. And I get that they cut him, and I understand that Aaron Glenn, the new head coach of the Jets, brought him in basically to tell him to get the hell out, you know, and I could see how that would chap him, you know, as a four-time MVP and a Super Bowl champ. But he was barely a Jet. Like, who's going to remember that? This part of his career, I think it's going to be a real footnote. And, you know, Rodgers saying, oh, I wanted to beat everybody associated with the Jets. It's like, dude, they rolled out the red carpet for you on so many occasions. They hired your offensive coordinator, your best friend is an offensive coordinator who was terrible, and Nathaniel Hackett. They brought all your cronies in. You know, I find it hard, you know, to kind of be sympathetic to Rodgers on that one. But to be fair to him, football-wise, he looked great. I mean, he looked as good as he's looked. The arm strength is always going to be there. And I thought he was moving around pretty well, too.
In your opinion, a couple of years ago, they looked unstoppable on offense. What's happened to the Dolphins? And then what happened to Daniel Jones? Was it just as simple as you get out of New York and then you shine somewhere else?
Yeah, New York football has been a rough, rough scene for, I don't know, the last decade, more if it's the Jets, but the Giants have not been good. Well, first things first with Daniel Jones. Let's see. You know, they've got some tougher defenses coming up with the Colts, and I know the Colts have some weapons, but Daniel Jones, you know, I'm not wishing this on him, but, you know, history will tell you that he's going to get hurt, or, you know, there's a strong possibility of that. And maybe he's found the perfect coach with Shane Steichen. I want to see a little bit more before I believe in, what are they calling him, Indiana Jones now. Yeah. I don't know if he's saving the day quite yet for the Colts. Let's see them play a team that actually cares. There was no evidence that Miami Dolphins wanted any part of that game. And obviously, you know, Mike McDaniel's been on the hot seat for a little bit. But, you know, that was an abomination, totally embarrassing. And, you know, we were talking about this on our show today about when you win, you know, your quirks and your sort of like, you know, your eccentricities, if you will, can become very charming. And then when you're losing, they become very annoying, I think, to the fan base. And so, you know, Mike McDaniel kind of, you know, up at the press conference, I don't even know how many fans really care about the press conference, but like up there kind of giving these weird answers to questions about, you know, just I'm one day closer to death, like these weird responses. I think we're a lot cuter when Tua Tagovailoa looked like one of the better quarterbacks in the league. And now that he doesn't, the act is kind of falling, wearing thin.
More of a coming out party for the Chargers and Herbert, or more real concern for the Chiefs?
Oh, man, I felt like the Chargers we're kind of treating this like their Super Bowl in a way, which at some points is admirable because they have not been able to beat the Chiefs in, what was it, like the last six tries or more. So you can understand why they're really gunning for a division opponent. I mean, it's been the Chiefs' world. Basically, we're all living in it up until, you know, last February when the Eagles smacked them around and maybe some of the shine and veneer came off of the Chiefs, possibly. But I think the Chargers were really treating this like, you know, this was going to set the tone for their whole season. And sometimes I wonder if you are on that kind of high and you put so much into that first game, do you get a little bit of a letdown afterwards? You know, listen, this is like historically Jim Harbaugh. This is when he really, like, really makes, you know, his huge impact on different programs. It took him obviously a little bit longer at Michigan to win, but, you know, historically, this has always been a big year. Year two has been a big year for him in any organization. So maybe we're seeing that. I want to see a little bit more, though, because there's a reason why chargering is like a term. And, you know, Justin Herbert, for as talented as this guy is, you know, looked just absolutely abominable in the playoff game last year against Houston. So kind of want to see a little more before I make a determination on him.
Well, even his predecessor with LaDainian Tomlinson and Antonio Gates and everybody else they had, Philip Rivers, never made the Super Bowl. So it's pretty crazy to think about going all the way back to then. We're talking with Maggie Gray, Infinity Sports Network, morning show co-host Maggie and Perloff. Are you on team start Dart or team let him ride?
So I would have started Dart at halftime. I mean, what are you even waiting for? And that's not a disrespect to Russell Wilson. I know what he's meant to the league. I understand that. But if you're the New York Giants, I mean, I get it. You have Andrew Thomas out, one of their standout left tackle. I get that you don't want to put Dart, just throw him out there and have him get killed behind a bad offensive line. But we already know what we're going to get here with Russell Wilson, don't we? And, you know, there's never really a perfect time to throw a rookie in the fire. You know, playing against the Cowboys who didn't, you know, have much of a pass rush, clearly missed Micah Parsons, might not be a terrible spot. I had slated before the season started, I thought their road game at New Orleans was probably the time they would start him. I believe that's week five. But at this point, what is it like? What is it? I'm not going to say what does it matter, but like, look how overmatched they were against the Washington Commanders. The Commanders didn't even play that great on offense. Like, if this had been midseason kind of Commanders or whatever we think midseason looks like for them, they could have won that game by a lot more. And, you know, to me, I think it's not just a fan thing. I imagine it has to be a coaching thing too. Like, all these guys, their jobs are tied into Jackson Dart. I would start them, like, give hope to the fan base where they've had very little.
49ers done before this thing even gets started. It looks like Kittle's going to be out at least a month.
Oh man, can I make a confession to your audience? And I hope that I can still maintain some kind of credibility with them.
Oh boy, I have a feeling where this is going.
I picked the 49ers to win the Super Bowl.
I knew it.
It was
a terrible choice.
It was a terrible choice. I'm sorry though, and here was my logic. My logic was, you know, I understood that there still were some injuries, but I didn't think it'd be possible that the injury bug would hit them as bad as it did last year when they were the most injured team in the NFL. Because historically, the 49ers kind of toggle back and forth between like a really bad injury season, then a really good season of health. And I was kind of banking on the pendulum sort of swinging back health-wise in their favor. Yeah, George Kittle's now out for several weeks. Brock Purdy's already dealing with an issue on his non-throwing shoulder. And, you know, he's a tough guy. And he's got a toe issue, which is, you know, we should probably be paying more attention to that than we already are. I'm worried that I got really, I'm going to be snake bitten here because they have the easiest schedule in the NFL. So I thought they'd be able to really hang. But I'm looking around the NFC and I'm looking around at some of the defenses. I think the offenses will catch up, but just some of the defenses that we saw even week one, and yikes. I mean, that's going to be difficult, you know. Green Bay's got a great defense. The Rams have a great defense. You know, it's just the Commanders have a great defense. There's just a lot of really good defenses in the NFC. It's going to be a challenge.
You think the Lions are in real trouble without their coordinators?
I do. I really do. That did not look the same. And again, maybe this is the Packers' defense is just lights out. That's totally possible. But I'll tell you what, that offense just did not have any of the speed, the zip. I mean, they had no ground game to speak of. And it's funny because I think people look at the Lions and say, oh, it's all about Dan Campbell, you know, the Danimal always going for it on fourth down, and it's this high-flying offense that scores a lot. It's a run-based offense, like a lot of teams in the NFL. But, like, them running the ball, it was always their secret weapon, and they got bubkiss against the Packers. Again, you know, Packers just could be awesome, and maybe they'll find some of their mojo and magic back, but Jared Goff had no time, which is never a good recipe, and the run game couldn't do anything. So, yeah, I'm concerned for sure, especially on the offensive side.
Before I let you go, another heartbreaking loss here in Atlanta, and the only way that the Falcons know how, your kicker, who was an all-pro a couple of years ago, misses a chip shot 43-yarder at the buzzer, which would have sent it into overtime. But outside of that, Maggie, did you think the Falcons, particularly on offense, looked like they have the promise that we're all hoping for?
Yeah, I don't know if, like, is there a moratorium on Penix, just the tip jokes in your radio station? We've already done them to death, and it was only week one. But I thought that he was really impressive. You know, we're going around looking at all the second-year quarterbacks, and I feel like he's definitely not the weak link. I mean, that's for sure. What was it, an 18-play drive? Very impressive. You know, obviously Tampa's defense is really good. Probably should have included them in one of the great defenses in the NFC. I was shocked that Younghoe Koo missed that field goal. And I'm sorry, I'm not trying to rub it in. I was just stunned that he missed, because he's automatic. And I just assumed that game was going to overtime, and who knows what would happen there. But I was really just sort of just stunned. And I don't think it means much, because I think he's going to rebound and be fine. But I would have liked to see that game go to overtime, because it was a really entertaining back and forth, lead changes all over the place. And you know, I hope that the Falcon fans, I'm not going to tell you how to feel, but, you know, forest through the trees a little bit, right? Like, the fact that Penix looked good in week one is the most important thing. And a divisional loss stinks, and you hate to start the season that way, but, like, the bigger picture is positive.
Well, I'll tell you what, little inside scoop here from Atlanta, Maggie. We are all on cut coup watch here. That's where we're at. That's where we're at right now. They brought in a kicker today to have some competition. A guy that's been a fringe kicker in the NFL. Ironically, Maggie kicked for the Vikings last year for four games, and he went 11-12. So maybe a little homecoming in Minnesota. We all are not going to be surprised here if in a day or two, Younghoe Koo has played his last game as a Falcon.
Oh, my gosh. I'm sorry. I did not see that, and I'm pretty stunned. You know, the 49ers waived Jake Moody today. I mean, I don't think you want any part of that.
No.
That's crazy. They're going to cut him because of that? He made so many huge kicks last year.
Yeah, well, here's the thing. He was tied just behind Justin Tucker going into last season for the best kicking percentage all time. And then he missed nine kicks last year, but it was partially due to a hip injury. So we all thought he was going to be okay. Comes back this year, wins the kicking competition over a NFL international prospect by the name of Lenny Krieg. And then he was all set to go week one. And then that happened. So.
Oh, man. You know what's funny? I'm sorry that I didn't know that he missed nine kicks last year, so apologies for not having that number. But it's funny, when I was watching the quarterback show on Netflix, which I'm sure you guys all watch when they're following Kirk Cousins, and it felt like Koo was like the real star of the Kirk Cousins storyline, you know, because he kept kicking these, you know, amazing, you know, he kept coming up so clutch, you know, in the first part of the season. So I guess, he got hurt and it kind of fell apart. Huh?
Maggie, he was automatic, again, to the point where he was putting up, like, Hall of Fame record number statistics, and then last year happened, and he just completely fell off the table. None of us saw it coming. But then again, like I said, this year he came back. He looked great in preseason. He was making all of his kicks. We all thought he was ready to go for act number two. And then he doinked one, and then he missed the big one. So, unfortunately, yeah, we're looking at a ticking clock here for Younghoe Koo. He may get one more shot at it. We don't know for sure yet. But, again, I wouldn't be surprised if you see a new kicker kicking for the Falcons on Sunday night in primetime versus Minnesota. Maggie, appreciate the time. As always, we'll chat soon. Love talking ball with you.
Thanks so much, Chris. Talk to you soon. And thanks so much for having me on the show. Appreciate it.
All right. That is Maggie Gray there, Infinity Sports Network morning show co-host with Andrew Perloff. Maggie and Perloff. Yeah, man. It's not good. When you say all that out loud, doesn't sound good. Really doesn't. Yeah, our Hall of Fame kicker just, like, fell off the table completely and is now unplayable to the point where he's probably going to get cut. 404-726-0929. Only the Falcons. Only the Falcons. When we get back, I know we're running a little bit behind, but that was good stuff with Maggie. A football frenzy. And don't forget, Sports Talk on 92.9 The Game is presented by Paramount Plus. You can't count on much, but you can always count on Sundays with the NFL on CBS. And Paramount Plus, stream your local NFL game live every Sunday all season long, starting at just $30 for your first year. That's like $250 a month. Visit ParamountPlus.com/NFL to get started today. Again, it's just so funny to me, right? Like, we're wrapping up our conversation there with Maggie Gray. Appreciate her hopping on. Check out Maggie and Perloff on the Infinity Sports Network Fun Show. Basically, I laid out because she was surprised. Like, to her, it was surprising to hear how much Koo has struggled, because she's right. Like, from a national perspective, you think of Koo as one of the best kickers in the league. Like, if you're not boots on the ground here in Atlanta every single day, you know, you're not keeping up. Like, do I know about the Colts kicker and his history?
It's not Rodrigo Blankenship still?
No, that people are calling for him for the Falcons.
I saw that, yes.
Guys, I hate to break it to you. He's just not that good.
If Rodrigo was good,
he'd be on a team.
He'd be on a team.
Even in the CFL, he's just not that good. Sorry, love him, but one of the coolest Georgia players ever made being uncool cool, which is something that's really difficult to do. But as I was talking to Maggie Gray, I was like, yeah, you know, he missed 9 kicks last year, then he had an injury, but then he came back this year and nailed the preseason, nailed the competition versus Lenny Krieg, and we were all set for the return of Koo, Act 2, Electric Boogaloo. and then he did that. He doinks one, and then he misses the game-tying field goal. So what are you going to do? But it's just funny to hear, like, you know, somebody, again, who's not in it every single day, but covers the entire league. You know, you say young, what's the word association with Younghoe Koo? Great. Because again, if you missed it, going into last season, his percentage for his career was second only behind Justin Tucker. Like, that's how good he's been for the Falcons ever since he came over from the Chargers. And to have him go from that to this has just been mind-boggling. Now, again, I'll let you hear some of this coming up in a second, but he went into painstaking detail because he ditched on, let's be honest, he ditched on Sunday because, I mean, I wouldn't want to talk to the media either, but it's kind of your job there, bud. You were the goat in a bad way of the game. You need to, you know, face the media. He didn't. So he talked yesterday and he just went into painstaking detail about mechanical adjustments and field turf, and just like, dude, you're not helping. You're digging that hole that you've dug for yourself deeper and deeper and deeper. Warren, because you know what people care about if you're a kicker? One thing. Those uprights, put it through them. That's it. I don't care if it doinks. I don't care if it double doinks, hits a crossbar. Just have the thing go in. That's all that matters. So, unfortunately, not good news here for Koo. No word yet. We'll see what happens later in the week. Let's hear from Raheem Morris. He did confirm that they will try to sign a kicker, at least to the practice squad. They did that today. This was Raheem discussing the plan.
Yeah, we got to go out. You know, like, it's only, you know, like we always talk about, we always create those competitive moments and find people, whether it be workouts or whatever the case may be. And if we are lucky enough and fortunate enough to sign somebody that looks good enough to come in and compete, that we feel like we do it throughout the week, we possibly can. But we'll keep scouring. And then, like, in the meantime, you know, we got to line up, we got to kick it, we got to make it, and we got to go through our process.
So they did that, and Oren and I joked before, they brought in a kicker with the last name Romo. So as long as you don't ask him to hold it, he should be fine. Just kick it, don't hold it. But you see that they didn't waste any time. They wasted no time. They brought in somebody. He screwed up on Sunday. By Tuesday morning, they had a plan. So that shows you that they're taking this thing seriously. Raheem also said, hey, man, and this is something I was just talking about. He did his job in the offseason.
You know, you're always worried about the mental part when you're talking about the kicker, the quarterback, the head coach, and all those things. So, like, you had to factor those things in. That's what the offseason was for, bringing in Lenny, having some competition there. Having those guys in the offseason, cool, doing or having a really great offseason when it came to his body development, his growth, his mentality, his percentage when it came to the kicks, when you guys were out there charting just like us. all look good. And then for it to show up in the first game, it obviously creates the automatic panic that we're all going to go into, like we're going to do, in order to find out who can come in and help us, or whether we can stay the course and still figure out how to get it done.
Okay. I mean, yeah, it's unfortunate, but I'll give Ra credit for this. He's right. And you got to just do whatever you can do to make sure that that situation never happens again. Oh, let's hear a couple from Youngway next. He comments on his teammates having his back after a rough outing.
It's great to have the team that we have that have your back, and we don't really, you know, point fingers or anything like that. I mean, obviously, I got to do better. You know, offense did a great job giving us an opportunity there, and we got it. See it through, and it can't come down to that and end the game like that. And you know, it means the world to have the guys have my back and have each other's backs. But at the end of the day, I got to do my job to help the team win games.
How do you mentally?
Yeah, and listen, that's all he can do at the end of the day. I mean, he's grateful for his teammates having his back, but he's, you know, it's like, Oren, it's like kicking in the NFL is almost like tennis or swimming or golf. Like, you're out there on an island, but it's you and the ball and the uprights. Like, it's, you're not involved in the same way the other guys are. So it's ultimately up to him. But he said he's still confident in himself.
You know, and mentally, you know, I don't think I'm in a position anything I can't handle. And I feel great and confident as ever. That's not really my thing, you know, to get down like that. I'm just going to go out, swing, and be the best version of myself that I know I can be, and I'm just going to do that, you know, starting with practice, and then on Sunday I'm going to do the same thing.
When you go into practice?
If he's here on Sunday, that's he may have jumped the gun on that one, unfortunately. And last one before we get out of here, this is what I was talking about. He starts to go into this diatribe about what's going on inside his own head. I think this was a mistake by Koo.
Throughout the game, with that turf, I was kind of hitting the ground a little bit. So I tried to make an adjustment, which I, you know, have done multiple times, and I just made the wrong kind of adjustment at that time. I know what to do, but it's just frustrating because I know better than that, and I just got to do a better job there.
Yeah, don't admit to that, bud. Okay, so you screwed up in real time. You knew you screwed up. And now what? But yeah, I just would have said we flush it. That was a perfect moment. Oh, flush it and we're on to the next one. I don't think we need an explanation as to why turf and mechanics and all this kind of stuff got in the way of you doing your job. Not a good look for me. 404-726-0929. When we get back to kick off the 8 o'clock hour, we've talked 2 straight hours of football, and we'll continue to talk football. But we got a producer six-pack coming up next. We'll see how many of those 6 questions are football-related. We'll also check in with our college insider, Joe DeLeon from A to Z Sports. We have not talked a minute of college football yet, and Georgia's got kind of a big game this weekend versus Tennessee. Are you concerned about the offense at all? They look kind of against Austin Peay. We'll talk about it in the 8 o'clock hour. Rolling on next.